I want to begin by putting a slide up on the screen. Then you punch that next slide there. If there's a mouse that makes movies, and that mouse were to find their way to your home, and with a tiny camera, he begins to video your home and do a documentary, what would it look like? Would it look like this next TV show? Now, if you're younger, maybe you've never seen that show. Leave It to Beaver. Okay. Or would it be this home? The next one here. I was going to change the wording in that little diagram on the right there, but. Or maybe it's this next one. This would be the movie. If you're a guest here with us today, a special welcome to you. We're doing a series called The Anatomy of a Healthy Home. And understand this, there is a critical issue as we approach this topic, and the critical issue is this. We must have the right destination and the definition of what is a healthy home, and that it comes from a marriage perspective. And oftentimes I see in marriages and have worked with marriages for plus 20 years or more, and I the sense is that, how's your marriage? Fine. And you go, no. Marriages have to be more than fine. We need marriages that are filled with grace and love and are demonstrating that to the world. But on the parenting side in the home, I think as well, we too often do not have the right destination in mind. Too many people just want a nice home, or even, I want nice Christian kids. And I go, no. We want kids who are disciples of Jesus, and even that is really not the end goal as well. For us that are parents, the goal is this. We want our kids to be able to disciple another person as they leave the home. We want our children to be disciplers. They can come along. We could use the word mentor and come along other people, and as even in the high school years, they can be doing that. What is our destination as a home? Now, understand that idea of making disciples, a disciple maker for our children, that is rooted in the Great Commission, to go and make disciples. And we as parents are called to equip our children to be influencers for the kingdom. Disciples who disciple. But I want to begin here by putting last week's verse, a key verse on that we looked at last week, 2 Timothy 3:14. Look how it reads. But as for you, continue in what you have learned and have become convinced of, because you know those whom you have learned it. There are two key components that come out of this passage here. First one, the issue of learning. Timothy's mother and grandmother set a foundation of learning where they were teaching Timothy the doctrines. Timothy's dad was anti-Christian. They wouldn't let him get circumcised. And so understand there was a home that dad didn't care. It actually probably was anti-faith. And yet Timothy learned the foundational issues that were putting in place the opportunity for salvation to work and for growth to happen. But in that, there's a second phase of understanding that we must understand when it comes to our kids. It's that word convinced. Our children must become convinced. That word literally, could be firmly persuaded. It is a bedrock in their hearts. They own their own faith. And the recognition, we can't guarantee that with our kids. But here's that we're called to mentor and to train in the foundational issues. And oftentimes, though, I think we get to this idea of, are they convinced? Are they going to own their own faith? And the temptation is to kind of just throw our hands up in the air and go, nothing that I can do. It's in God's hands. And I go, I don't believe Scripture communicates that. I believe this, the Scriptures teach that we have immense impact in our children owning their own faith and becoming convinced. But here's the deal. I don't think it will happen unless we begin to use a word, and it's the word intentional. Intentional. Now, other words for that. Think of other words. Purposeful, calculated, preconceived, thought out. If we have children and young students here today, let me throw you a question, parents. Would they look at you as a parent and say that you're intentional in your parenting? Or is it just whatever comes along? We are called to be intentional in discipling our kids so that they can become disciplers. But here, I want to begin with an illustration here. And here's a picture of a flight attendant. Before takeoff, I assume most people have flown here, but before the flight begins, you understand, this gal or guy stand up there, and they hold up this oxygen mask, and it shows, they'll show you how pulling on the tube in the event that there's cabin pressure, I've never lived where the pressure's gone and they've fallen down, okay, quite an experience, I'd assume if it does, but they tell you to pull on the tube, put it on, and it'll start the flow of oxygen. Everybody remember, most people remember that? There's a statement in there that they make. And it's been one that's been used in a number of illustrations. And the statement is spoken to the parents. And it says this, parents, put on your oxygen mask first. Don't worry about the kids. Put on your mask first. Let me give you the main point for today. If you're following along, we have an outline there if you're new here. In healthy homes, parents first put on their own spiritual oxygen mask. Let me rephrase that. We must first spiritually model the things that we want spiritually for our kids. And grandchildren, if you're a grandparent. If we want our kids to be firmly planted, to follow Christ, and even become disciple makers, recognize this. It starts with us as parents and grandparents. See, we are called to mentor them, to disciple them with intentionality. So that they can actually help another person. But in doing that, in thinking of that idea of disciple making, there is this issue of modeling, and we are teaching things, recognize, and we're not even using words. Our children are watching us, and they're interpreting the home world. They're interpreting us as parents. We are modeling all the time. Let me show you probably the key text when it comes to this idea of modeling and where it starts, where we put on our oxygen mask first. Deuteronomy 6, I'll put it on the screen, and it's so pointed, it doesn't need a lot of explanation, but look at this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You, the parent, shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. See, do they see a pursuit of God in our lives? Really? Verse 6, and these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. That's putting on the oxygen mask first. And then verse 7 gets into some things that you do for the kids. Look at that. You shall teach them. Do we really think that's just unintentional? Teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk to them when you sit in your house, and you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. That's what we're supposed to do for the kids. But now it comes back again. Look at how it ends. It's almost a sandwich here. Verse 8, you shall bind them on as a sign on your hand. It comes back to the modeling again. And they shall be frontlets between our eyes as parents. You shall write them on the doorposts of our homes and our gates. It's about us and modeling this to our children and grandchildren. But let me show you another text that applies to this idea of modeling. Look at Luke chapter 6, verse 39. He's speaking, telling a parable here, and look how it goes. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? And a disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Here's the application of this passage. It's pretty pointed. We can actually limit our children's movement toward Christ because of where we're at spiritually. If we plateau spiritually, why would we expect that our kids wouldn't? Rarely do I see kids going past their parents, spiritually speaking. It happens. But to a great degree, our children emulate their leaders. And parents, you are a leader. Yeah, there's teachers, and there's coaches, and there's heroes. But understand this, you are the leader as a parent. Now, some of you go, I don't have the gift of leadership. I don't know. Don't put that on me, Ken. And I go, by default, you are a leader, and they will be emulating our lives. And we can't get away from that as a parent. Let me give you another text. Matter of fact, you understand this stuff applies to all of us. This isn't, even if you're not married here, or you don't have children, this goes farther. Look at this one. Timothy 4:12. Let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. Here, Paul is pushing Timothy, and understand, they believe, they're taking a guess a little bit, but they think that Timothy spiritually was adopted by Paul about the age of 16. Where Paul came into his life. Now, when they do the math and when they figure out the age of this letter, for example, they think here that Timothy is about 30 years of age. So he's still a young man. So, but you understand this, if you're a student here today, Timothy became convinced and he was going after it. Paul was mentoring him, and there were changes, profound changes that were happening. And here, Paul writes, comes back and writes to him and says, you know, Timothy, you are an example. Be an example in what you do. Model it to other people. You see the reproduction that's taking place here with Timothy? And later on it goes, and go after other men who will train other men. See, discipleship is multiplication of people. But here's the deal, I think, when it comes to this passage here. There are a couple of scenarios that I think come out as one watches parenting. First, I think this. I believe some parents, their hoses are kinked off. And there's no spiritual tube that runs to Christ is little to none. And how do you impart anything if that's the case? But there's a second scenario here, I think, as well. And in part, it's back to what I said earlier. Parents don't have a clear picture of where they're headed. And I think here's the statement. No one's done it to me. No one's come alongside of me and mentored me. How am I supposed to do it with my kids when no one has done it for me? See, we feel the weight of it. The idea of coming alongside our kids and helping them become a discipler, and you go, how? Where do I start? And this is where I think you got to hang with me over the summer and go online and keep listening, because there's a place where we got to get it. If 80% of students are walking away from the body of Christ, somehow that number has got to change. But it's about our children being rooted in the Great Commission and people walking alongside of them to help them get that. Now, you got to recognize one other piece here. In the blog world or in parenting, when they write parenting books, their kind of assessment of the home right now is that spiritual starvation is taking place. There's little oxygen flowing. See, the flight attendants are yelling, emergency, that the oxygen masks are falling down. And the parents are either ignoring it or they don't feel like they need to do it. Or they don't know how. Or the parents, or the child, they put it on and the child is struggling, and then what they do, what do they do? But here's another issue, kind of a side issue. When you read a lot or go into the blog world of parenting, one of the assessments is this, is that parents are putting great intentional energy with their sons and their daughters in being successful in all different kinds of areas other than the spiritual world. And the result of that is what they're concluding is that children are leaving home never fully convinced to follow Jesus. One of the books that I read for this series, or listened to actually, he made the statement, Christian parents are more concerned about Harvard than heaven. And you go, I think that might be true. But I got to acknowledge, you know what, parenting isn't simple. The home isn't simple. Wanting our kids to walk with Christ is not simple. But today, I want to push you three components that are critical if we are to model and putting on our oxygen mask first. And these aren't, I recognize they're not all inclusive, but three things that if that mouse was in your home and videotaping, that the documentary would include these three things. Now, I got to pause. Because, again, I've said this a couple of times. This series, when you think about marriage and you think about the parenting process, it creates guilt in people like crazy. And here's where you got to hear me on this one. You are not to model perfection. You will never be perfect. Matter of fact, I think we miss something in this. Is that our imperfections, even in parenting, are meant to be used for God's transformation, even in our kids' lives. You will not be the perfect parent. Don't try to be. That's not the goal, to be a perfect parent and then feel, oh, I've done it all right. Failure as a parent is actually used as part of your journey towards seeking God. Do we know that? That Jesus uses our failures to change our hearts. We can't just pull up the bootstraps and go, I'm going to be the perfect parent. He uses failure even in the lives of our kids. And it's intentional by God. Remember Peter, just a quick example. Peter, before Jesus goes to the cross, he denied him three times. And you go, was that an evil act that he did? I go, no. It was part of Peter's training, of being equipped to do it different. Let me jump into the three aspects here, though, this morning. Putting on your oxygen mask first. Number one in the notes, I said it this way. We are to be demonstrating that we are on a path of an ever-deepening relationship with Jesus. Is that we are on a journey. We're not there yet, but this is about God working in us, but it's about our children looking at us and concluding, and maybe this, to say it this way, they could actually testify in a court of law that mom and dad are moving toward Christ and looking to follow Jesus. They could be witnesses that we're falling in love with Jesus. You know, as a pastor, I get to watch people and God at work. And it's so fun to see that. And I see it around me a lot. But as children look at you, now, yeah, maybe when they're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, they won't put it in those terms, but eventually 8, 9, 10, they will become interpreters and they will be judging where you will be, where you are at spiritually. And realize that the faith journey is rooted in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Do our children feel it? That we're loving God, we'll be pushing into that, that we're writing it on our foreheads first? Or are they concluding that our relationship with Jesus has plateaued? And grandparents, this speaks to us as well. See, if they're not seeing it in our lives, if they're not seeing the spiritual fruit, guess what? It's in a subconscious way, they're doing this. Mom and dad really aren't that convinced. There's no relational allegiance to Jesus. It's a religion, not a relationship. Folks, is real faith happening? Because let me put a picture on the screen here. When it happens, and there's mom and dad. When God pours into mom and dad, and it begins to just drip out the fruit of the Spirit, and you know where it lands on? Our children. And folks, they sense it, and they know it. See, people can say, I want to grow spiritual, move my maturity along in Christ, and they're not achieving it. People can want it and not be doing it. But recognize that as we live our lives in front of our kids, that we are gaining a spiritual reputation with our children. A reputation. Man, and will they come and will they testify someday that mom and dad are on God's agenda and a journey toward him? Mom and dad are convinced that they got to follow Christ. But you realize, again, if you're single, if you don't have kids, how this applies to you. If you're a student in high school or college, you understand this is also about your journey. See, he wants us just to love him, to give us our affections to him. And the key, do we believe, are we convinced that the God of this universe wants a relationship with us? Whether you're 10 or whether you're 90. And I'm telling you, he does. See, let me put a statement up on the screen, even as we are on this journey, that's a little bit of a twist to it. Are we communicating to our children that God is actually more important in our lives than a relationship with them or our spouses? Would they look at my life, would my kids look at my life and said that my relationship with Christ is more important than my relationship with Deanna? You see, that's about being faithful to the journey of walking with Jesus. We are to communicate to our children that we are serious in the faith. And that there's a bigger purpose than them, than the marriage. See, do we believe that ultimately walking with Christ and being a part, being used by him, is the ultimate place where we find meaning and purpose? If meaning and purpose is found in the family alone, in my marriage alone, the kids alone, recognize that, then that's becoming an idol. If God doesn't come first. Let me go to a second quality here that we got to model. Number two, we are demonstrating the character trait of being teachable. Now, I can't remember what vacation it was on. We were along a beach somewhere, and there was a whole bunch of seagulls flying, and something landed on me. I don't know, anybody else have that happen to you? Okay. There was some bird poo there, okay, on my back. Do we have people in our lives that are willing to say and point out the stuff on our back? Now, you got to catch something here. This idea of being teachable is not about learning. Being teachable actually is a different category of allowing people into our lives that care enough to go beyond this. Ken, how are you? Fine. And then they would press and go, really? Tell me what fine means. See, but the challenge is, oftentimes we're deeply insecure. And sometimes people look at us and say, you know what, we're needy. And we only need people into our lives that are going to tell us the positive things about us. You know, we want people in their lives to make us feel better. See, when people actually do care, though, and they try to tell us that there's things that are on our back, you know, the bird on our back, you know what happens so often? People retreat, and they put up a wall. I've even seen times people walking away from a relationship. I go, that's not teachable. See, being teachable is allowing people in where it's not even just always feeling good about ourselves. The goal is not feeling good, it's holiness. You know, there's a saying, you've heard it. It goes something like this. People will not listen until you know that you care. Okay. That is an oversimplification in relationships. If you've ever worked in relationships, that is far, it's too simple. It's really not a reality. It sounds nice. It's actually an idiom. Because here's the deal. Some people's definition of the other person caring for me includes that you will never tell me that there's poo on my back. See, they believe that you don't care because you tell them that there's stuff in their lives, in your life. Now, I recognize people can look at us and even friends and make wrong conclusions. Yeah. But do we have people in our lives that we trust where they can be gut honest with us? See, we need people who can stand on the porch and ask. We need to become people who are saying, come on into my life. Tell me my blind spots. Do we have people in our lives that way? That is the real mark of caring. Now, here's a hard one. Parents, if you're a parent here today, we actually, I think, as they get a little bit older, we need to actually invite our children into our world to give commentary on our parenting. See, would our kids say that we're teachable? But it means that we have to be humble even to them. And you know, humility there is with your kids is a sign of weakness. You never let your kids view you as weak, you know. They might run over you. You go, right? Here's a stat that I've discovered. For years, I've been asking men in men's ministry, how many times has your father come to you and made a statement like this? I'll use my son, Andy. Andy, would you forgive me? What I just did for you was sin, and it was wrong, and would you forgive me? Not just say, I'm sorry. Sorry means nothing in our culture. You got to catch that. Do we admit our sin to our sons and our daughters and say, would you forgive me? When I've asked that question of hundreds of guys over the years. Do you know what the percentages of men who say, I had a father do that for me? About 10%. Consistently. That means 9 out of 10 dads never sinned against their sons and daughters. Yeah. Do you understand the tension? Are we willing to humble ourselves and even go to our kids and admit our failures? Now here's, on the accountability issue in this teaching, I got to point out one nuance. If you have a marriage where there's not a trust between a husband and wife, that person is not going to probably be that accountability partner. I'll be frank with you. It probably is going to, if they got it, there's got to be a level of trust in order for your spouse to be that honest with you. But don't get stuck with friends who will tell you that everything is okay. And I go this, if you are, they're really not a true friend. But if you don't respect anybody, if you don't allow anybody into your life, here, you need to sit in front of a mirror and ask why not. If you can't name names, you need to ask why. See, allowing people to speak the truth in love to us is real love. And it's an important piece of caring for another. Pursue someone. Yeah, you got to do it with wisdom. I recognize that. But there's a third character I got to jump through here to finish. This trait must be demonstrated in the home if we're going to put on our oxygen mask first. And number three, it's this. They must see us pursuing wisdom when it comes to the home. To rephrase it there, we must become a learner. In terms of our homes. Now, here's how people do. Some people puff out their chest and go this. Experience. I've learned it all through experience. People who only learn from the past, that are only referencing the past, I'll say this, you're stuck if that's you. Because it keeps implying, if it was good enough when I grew up, when I was in the church, we did it, fill in that blank. I think this, it shows ignorance. We have plenty of older people here. Our experience growing up was profoundly different than our kids and our grandkids. I didn't grow up with a computer in my pocket called a cell phone. I had a party line, okay? It was my first years. Remember how you hold the line open and somebody's on the line, your neighbor, and then you'll listen? We knew certain people in the neighborhood who were always listening, okay? But think of it even in this way. And weeks ahead, I'm going to get it even more. In the world, 20 years ago, there was stuff being done that was considered evil, and today it's considered good and loving. That world has changed. We no longer live in the same world. 20 years, and you look at the morality and what is good and what's evil, and it's profoundly different. See, too many parents keep looking back at the glory days as the basis of parenting. I think even growing up, you know what? You could play three sports. I played three sports, actually four sometimes in high school. You could do it. Kids can't do it these days. The pressure to play all year long, the intensity of the pressure, activities, even the intensity of paying for college. I could work enough in one summer to pay for my whole college year. Now they're worried about borrowing, $20,000-$30,000 a year. We had one black and white TV. There was no games. Dan and I went out for some dessert the other night, and we wanted to watch a Twins game. And the TV was broken where we were eating. And you know what I did? I pulled out my phone and I watched the Twins game on our phone. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that couldn't have happened. So parents, you are not out of school yet. Grandparents, you are not out of school yet. We've got to learn. And, you know, I'll say this. You know, I've dealt with a lot of affairs because of a lot of the marriage counseling that I've done, but I didn't learn about an affair and how to deal with it by having an affair. I read books. I've read three or four books on the issue just to understand what's going on. See, people get stuck And they say this, I'm only going to respect and listen to those people that have gone through what I've gone through. That's not learning. That's actually not even being teachable. Okay, if you get cancer, are you going to run to your neighbor who had cancer and he did some treatment and you go to him for treatment? Or are you going to run to the oncologist who's actually studied the issue for years? Never experienced cancer. I'm going to go to the oncologist. Experience alone is not the basis for wisdom. And if we don't become learners, we will plateau on how much God will use us. He wants us to be more skilled, to be wiser in how we deal with people. You know, this stuff even applies to the church. Ministry has profoundly changed within the church in 40 years. You know, back in the good old days, there was neighborhood churches. People went to their church in the neighborhood. About 30 years ago, that died. When people started commuting, when the whole issue of commuting really came into play, people all of a sudden realized that they will drive 30 miles to a church and drive by 15 churches to get to the one that they prefer. The neighborhood church is dead. So I feel like I'm losing ground every week. This week, an article came in my inbox about the tensions and how technology has changed the church. See, in many ways, the elders are called to model learning, and the staff, we got to model learning within the church. If we don't, understand this, the church will die. Parents, if your learning isn't in your cup right now, as a parent, if you dismiss it, your home will die. It takes 4 to 6 years of schooling to become a good teacher, to get that master's degree in the public school system, and then they work at continuing ed credits. And we think it only takes the school of hard knocks to become a good parent. Hogwash. Dads, do you know that you have more impact on your daughter's femininity than mom does? I didn't learn that from my parents or the school of hard knocks. See, we are called to learn, to gain a wisdom that's applied to the home. And if we're unwilling to become learners, it means this, we're probably not teachable. Or B, there's a second, maybe it's just not convenient for us. That's the attitude for us. Doesn't fit into my schedule. You know, our whole life is like that. Even church is like, if it doesn't fit in my schedule, I'm going to be inconvenienced. We want our marriages to be convenient. You know what? To go out on regular dates for your marriage is inconvenient. Do you know that? Let's just combine it by taking the kids to their events and we'll call that a date. Doesn't work. It's not a date. It's not face-to-face time. See, we just don't want at times people to mess with our time, our money, our energy. We want to be spontaneous people. You know what? Free to live like we want. We want to model independence to our children. Do you know that independence is what got Adam and Eve kicked out of the garden? See, it's not convenient to read a book or listen to a book. Go to a bookstore. Anybody ever been to the Lifeway in Maple Grove at all? Huge bookstore down in Maple Grove. And if you go into that store, they will have literally row after row, a number of rows of either parenting, marriage, fathering, mothering, men's, women's issues. Why? Why are there rows and rows? It's because the home is a mess. That's why. If it wasn't a mess, it wouldn't be written about. See, but it's not convenient. And some of you are going, I don't like to read. Audiobooks. You drive in your car. The last book I was reading, Deanna and I were on vacation, and she had to put up with it, but we were listening to a parenting book while we were driving on Route 66 in California and Arizona. See, are we doing the things? Are we learning? See, when you learn and you do some of that stuff, you know what might happen? You'll learn it and go, oh, I blew it. Then you got to go back to your kids and ask for forgiveness again. See, or are we learning? We are learners, by the way. People learn for their jobs all the time. Sports, hunting, fishing, decorating, scrapping. Do they still do scrapping anymore? Deanna hasn't done it for a while. You know, there's some men who've impacted me in this area of learning. And one of them is a guy by the name of Howard Hendricks. He put out a video series called Seven Laws of the Teacher many, many years ago. But he was a consummate master teacher. But he died about 5 years ago. He taught at Dallas Seminary for well into his 80s. And I want to put a quote up from him, from Howard Hendricks. Look how it reads. The effective teacher always teaches from the overflow of a full life. If you stop growing today, you'll stop teaching tomorrow. Neither personality nor methodology can substitute for this principle. You cannot communicate out of a vacuum. You cannot impart what you do not possess. If you don't know it, truly know it, you can't give it. This law embraces the philosophy that I, as a teacher, am primarily a learner, a student among students. I am perpetuating the learning process. I am still en route. And by becoming a student again, I, as a teacher, will look at the education process through a radically new and unique personal set of eyes. This requires a certain attitude, that attitude that you have not yet arrived. A person who applies this principle of teaching is always asking, how can I improve? Think of it this way. As long as you live, you learn. And as long as you learn, you live. You know, if I were just to rephrase that, he's talking more formal education, both in the schools and seminaries and colleges. But I would say this, the effective parent always influences from the overflow of a full spiritual life. If I stop spiritually growing today, I stop influencing my children and my grandchildren tomorrow. What does it mean? Read a book. Listen to it when you drive. Talk to your spouse, and when something, an aha thing comes and you learn something, you look at the other person and say, and have a conversation. And it might even need to be with your children. See, parents need to be talking even with each other, because I find so many parents are not on the same page when it comes to parenting. Now, warning, don't nag, don't condemn, learn together. In the bottom of your notes, I don't have it on the screen, but in the bottom of your notes, I listed 4 books here. Highly recommend these. If you want a book on marriage, probably the most life-changing book for me, I still use it today. It's about 30 years old, 25 years old. The Marriage Builder by Larry Crabb. Scott used it in our, and I think, Scott, it changed your marriage just reading this. How to Really Love Your Child by Ross Campbell. Maybe one of the best books when it defines what is a relationship with your son or your daughter. Now, that one's not on audio. All the others are. Visionary Parenting by Rob Reinow. And Disciple Making Parent by Chap Bettis. Grandparents, let me say, tell you this. You should actually do a parenting book. When Deanna and I are listening to this stuff, what does it mean? It means this, is when I get a chance to have a conversation with my son and my daughter, at some point I will have resources in my pocket on topics that will actually maybe give them some input and actually come alongside of them and help them. Do you catch that we are called to be learners? If we quit learning, if we plateau, we're in trouble. You know, the vow I've made is I don't want my children and grandchildren to just see me plateauing. Yes, I want them to go farther past me. I want them to parent better than I did, and I think they are. But I want them to become effective disciple makers. I want their children to be disciple makers. And he uses the language as, I want my daughters to be missionaries, as he is a missionary. I want them to be on God's agenda and go farther than I do. My son called me a couple weeks ago and just asking some questions, but he was doing a Bible read through with an unbeliever. And then the last time they met, this unbeliever shared that my wife and I just separated. Andy, you gotta be a learner. Gotta jump in and learn different topic. Are we learning? See, if we're not teachable, if we're not walking by faith, if we don't have that journey toward Christ, if we're not a learner, guess what? They look at us and go, it's a religion. It's not really about Christ. Let me finish with one last verse. I need to quit. Philippians 3:17. Strong verse. Brothers, join in imitating me. Keep your eyes on those who walk according to the examples you have in us. Do you catch that intentional modeling? Model, model, model. Paul writes, join in imitating himself. Can we honestly say to our children, imitate me? And the truth is, they are. They are, whether we like it or not, they are. See, the mouse is videotaping. What's the documentary going to be? What's the movie going to be? What's the show going to be? But what if, folks, what if, when you think about the home, what if at the end of that mouse filming that show, he puts a title on it, that mouse puts a title on it that says this, a home that was changed by God. See, we can do this. We can move our children to a different place, our grandchildren to a different place. But it takes intentionality. It takes some effort on our part. Let's stand and pray.